I did, James. I sometimes have fun with ChatGPT because I'll ask it the large language model about myself. Or so I asked it, what is Kate Lettiger's connection to James Corbett? And first it said, I'm not aware of any connection. And then I said, well, didn't she curate his recent art show in Japan? And then the language model comes back with, oh, yes, that's what you're referring to. Yes. And then I asked about what the name was of your this painting that was the centerpiece of the show. And it had to do with biodigital convergence. And I asked what the price was, and it was $200,000. You're really living quite. Oh, the show is in Kyoto, too.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, anyway. I look forward to receiving the $200,000.
This is Kate Lettiger and the Here Come the Meat Bastards podcast. For those of you who like my casual carpentry and yard farming articles, you can find more of that on my new website, thecasualspecialist.com. This week, I'm delighted to welcome James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, talking about why you shouldn't trust your trusted news source. Hope you enjoy. I just wonder what it takes to, for people who would be very happy to imagine that corruption can happen in corporations, corruption can happen in American foreign policy, but the idea of corruption in the government, aimed at the government's own citizens, seems absolutely beyond the pale, and no, that doesn't happen. Or maybe it happened in the past, but we don't do that anymore. And so, what does it take to entertain the idea that the normal that you take for granted, the normal that is communicated by the news and all types of mainstream media, may just be something that has been deliberately constructed, and that you're being, in other words, misled?
Well, in some sense, that's the bajillion-dollar question that I suppose if I could answer perfectly, I would simply answer that and solve all of our problems. But, I mean, in some way, this is the core question of what it is I'm exploring and what I do. And I guess my way of dealing with this is to put information out there and trust that those who are willing and able to, at the very least, challenge their presuppositions will find this information and will engage in that process. However, having said that, I guess it comes down to the question, the fundamental question of psychology and how it is that people change their mind, or if they even change their mind fundamentally. Maybe we are born inclined towards some sort of political philosophy or outlook on the world or other. And I say that because, as a Canadian, I was brought up in, of course, the very socialist inclined Canadian indoctrination system. Basically, everyone in Canada a socialist from birth, because that's just the way it works. And everyone trusts the government. The government's there for your good. Or at least that was the case when I was growing up. Maybe there is some more skepticism at this point. But I was certainly steeped in that. And yet I remember, it was probably junior high, high school. I don't know. At some point, I think we started to explore some of the questions of political philosophy. And at some point, I read a little bit of John Locke. And it just instantly resonated with me. Oh, yeah, okay. So, do liberty to do what you want as long as it's not infringing on the rights of other people to do what they want. Yeah, that sounds about right. And so that instantly resonated with me, even though I feel like I had not been prepared for that in any of my other indoctrination that I'd received up to that point. But it instantly resonated. And it took me years and years to really discover that fundamentally, oh, yeah, maybe I am libertarian. Well, actually, no, maybe I'm all the way anarchist. And it was a process of growing into that. But I think there was something about that message that resonated with me as soon as I saw it. So are we inclined towards being open to information, even if we haven't encountered it before, so that when we finally encounter it, it resonates with us? Maybe. And if that's the case, unfortunately, that's almost a bleak way of looking at it, because that means there are certain people who just simply will never be able to entertain a different political idea than the ones that they grew up with. And if that's the case, well, then I don't know. I don't know what to do about that. But can we change people's minds? I'd like to get your opinion on this. Have you ever had an experience breaking through the walls of propaganda that people have built up around them?
Well, I don't know if I can take credit for breaking through myself, but I can tell you about my husband's aha moment. And, you know, he was always somebody who was, you know, open-minded, but he definitely was more in the realm of, you know, that's conspiracy is over there, and here's the regular world. And his aha moment had to do with, there was a story about Donald Trump that was reported that Donald Trump said he was complaining that he looked orange under certain lighting. And he was blaming the lighting for making him look orange. Right. And so this story was getting repeated by my husband's friends and saying, you know, can you believe that narcissism and what a fool, blah, blah, blah. And so he thought, all right, well, let me look at that, you know, because he likes a joke on Donald Trump's expense, you know, to enjoy something like that. So he looked at it and he thought, Donald Trump was making a joke there. And he said to his friends, it's like, no, Donald Trump was making a joke. He wasn't complaining about the lights. He was kind of making a joke on his own, you know, at his own expense to kind of lighten the mood or something. And they said, oh, no, this was delivered straight. And then all of these other news outlets, you know, the Times and Washington Post and Guardian, they were all reporting it as if it was delivered straight. And he realized, wait a minute, the media is completely misrepresenting what happened here. And for him, that was just like a light bulb went off. He started to look further. And I mean, he is no fan of Donald Trump, but this just seemed like, you know, he felt like he's not going to be lied to about something that happened, but he realized, yeah, he was getting lied to. And this lie was, you know, causing more divisiveness. And so shortly after that, I came home and he was lying on the couch and listening to the Corbett Report. And I realized, okay, you know, the moment has come. And I was a little relieved, but I was also a little sad for him because
all right. Do you know what you're getting into?
Yeah. But he, you know, and he said, and I wrote down a quote because I thought he stated it well. He said, news is meant to make people angry and upset, because when you're angry and upset, critical thinking goes out the window.
Yeah.
You know, and that's schismogenesis, the creation of
right.
socialism.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that's at the center of a lot of what happens, that people are so wedded to an idea of reinforcing their own beliefs, their own things that they take for granted, the ideas of their team beliefs, that whenever something is fed, anything that feeds that and feeds that anger just completely blinds them to any idea that something can be different. And so a person like myself, you know, who I, liberal friends, family members, saying that all these things that I'm concerned about are far right issues. I think, you know, I don't want to be lumped in with that. It drives me insane to every time, you know, Trump talks about vaccine stuff or whatever. It's just like, oh, crap, you know, this isn't helping anything. This is just driving the wedge farther and farther apart. It's making people close their ears even more. It's just making an issue, a valid concern, something that half the freaking country can say dismiss because they say it's crazy. It is undermined by the opposing team supporting it.
And the craziest part is that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it was exactly flipped. It was the lefties who were absolutely against Big Pharma and understood that this gigantic corporation might not have your personal health as their number one priority. And yet here we are, right? Isn't that amazing how it has gone completely 180 degrees, totally on its head?
Yeah, it is amazing and a sad and unfortunate.
But you know what? I want to pick up on that, on the story of your husband, because I think that brings out an incredibly important point of this, which, to put it in the Hollywood context, you can't be shown the Matrix. You have to see it for yourself. And I think that's an incredibly important part of this. Until there is that moment, and it could be something so tangential as, hey, that was a joke. Why are you taking it seriously? Whatever it is. Until you have that moment and see it for yourself in operation and know in your heart of hearts, no, that's a lie. That's wrong. Until you get in, I think, drawn into it in that way, it's incredibly hard to overcome the propaganda and the conditioning. And I would relate that to my own experience, actually. For example, as I've mentioned before, I didn't even countenance the idea of 9/11 truth until 2006. It took me 5 years to really process that. And that's despite the fact that it's not like I was conspiracy adverse. I didn't believe Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone nut or any of those kinds of things that we're expected to believe. I knew there was something wrong with that story. But with 9/11, the propaganda and conditioning was just so overwhelming. How could you possibly question that? And it wasn't until I started encountering information that made me start looking up things for myself, until I started to engage in that process of going, well, that can't be true. Operation Northwoods, I've never heard about that. Until I started looking into it and finding that information for myself, I wasn't able to overcome that mental hurdle. So what does that say? I think there is some incredibly important part of this, that there's no person just yelling at you that's going to change your mind. It has to come from within. But how do you spur someone else to have that realization? I don't know if you can.
Well, I do get into conversations, you know, and there are some people that are willing to have the conversations. But what has happened, and some of those conversations have been around vaccination. And so a couple of people, the conversation has gone back and forth. And I found that when it comes to a point where I have answered some challenge, or, you know, the fourth challenge that they give me, and I've answered it, you know, okay, well, that's this, this, and this. And I'm guessing they're either tired of the conversation or they can't come up with a counter argument. I listen to the WHO, you know, to the World Health Organization. You know, just like that's my go-to, that's my trusted source. And, you know, and I think, all right, well, at least you're being honest. You're saying you put your faith in your trusted authority. But I also know that there's no point really in talking to them further, because that's sort of the end of the conversation. I have also a friend of mine who is in the journalistic profession, we have gone back and forth. And this has been pretty good, because this person has not stopped the conversation yet. But we go back and forth about who can you trust? Who's it worth paying attention to? And so recently I had sent an email to them recommending one of your videos. And so he brought up a few points in relation to that. And so I've kind of paraphrased some of them. So saying, who is worth paying attention to? Who is trustworthy? How do we decide? And then he goes on to dismiss the Rescue the Republic crowd, you know, Taibbi and Gabbard and Brand, et cetera, on the grounds that they aggrandize themselves by imagining they are carrying out a brave fight against the quote unquote deep state. So, you know, in that case, you know, he's kind of digging into, I think, the team of deep state equals Trump equals insanity, I can dismiss that. Thus, anything that comes out of Taibbi's mouth or Brand's mouth that's, you know, smacks of far right lunacy, and I'm not going to pay attention. I mean, that's something that, unfortunately, I think is, it's a stopper. It's an ear stopper to people who have a certain perspective.
But if I may interject, I would say that is exactly, completely the wrong way to go about this entire process. Because rather than determining the psychology of the individual who is speaking, and then determining, based on that, the worth of literally everything that comes out of their mouth, how about taking specific identifiable pronouncements of fact, verifying whether those facts are true, and then not caring in the least what mouth that is coming from, which I would like to think is more or less the approach that I at least aspire to. For example, if the legacy dinosaur media reports something that is factually true and correct, I'm not going to dismiss it because it was reported by the legacy media. In the same way that just because I personally like and trust or believe a lot of things or share a like mindset with this or that alternative media figure, I'm not going to believe specific pronouncements of fact from them simply because they say it. I'm going to verify and see if I can accurately identify whether that is truth or not truth or something in between, because often we can't come to definitive judgments. Sometimes things are just opinion or what have you. But I think trying to take everything that someone says and put it into that jar of, well, he's crazy, therefore it's not true, or he's believable, therefore it's true, is insanity. I mean, that's the wrong way to approach this.
Yeah, but then it gets characterized by that we only have so much time and we have to take shortcuts. So in the same way that that other friend says, I listen to The Who, this person says, you know, I have my trusted specialists, and, you know, they're his heuristics that he relies on to kind of give him perspective and determine who is worth listening to and who is not worth listening to. And there, he brings up that he once delved into the question of the JFK assassination when Stone was filming in Dallas, and he was overwhelmed by the range of theories and didn't know who to trust. And so eventually, you know, after going into all the rabbit holes, he gave up the effort and just has now come to the idea that he just prefers DeLillo's, you know, fiction book, Libra, for kind of the angle it gives on Oswald. But just sort of, I guess, threw up his hands like, you know, this is, who can you trust? I don't know, who can you trust, James? How do you know who you can trust? What would you say to that?
I don't trust people. That is exactly what I would say to that. I trust identifiable, triangulatable information that I can identify. So I understand that is not the perfect solution because, as you say, we are human beings who are limited in our ability to chase down every single fact that we ever hear. So we have to have some sort of filter by which we operate. And certainly I do tend to approach legacy media reporting with a quizzical, skeptical eye. And I do tend to approach the reporting of people that I know and trust in the alternative media, Whitney Webb or James M. Pilato or people like that, with a less skeptical eye. So that's just how human beings function. Having said that, for anything that I am trying to construct a case for, I mean, there's a difference between just information that I'm just kind of passively, that's coming across my newswire, as it were, versus information that I'm trying to actively advocate for and say, no, this is the truth about this. This is what we can say about this. When I'm putting something, for example, into a podcast, I better verify that information to the best of my abilities. And when it comes to that, I try, at any rate, not to rely on anything that's trust me, bro, I have this super secret source or super secret document that you can't see or know about, but trust me. Well, no, I don't tend to trust people on that. So it has to come from things that I can identify for myself. But really, I guess if we want some sort of, if we want a rubric by which we can grade, as it were, the information that we're getting, how about just this? How about we take the worldview that develops from the information that we are taking on board and that hopefully we can verify for ourselves, we construct a map of reality, essentially. We try to map that the terrain of reality with that information, and we see how close or how far away from the mark we hit with that information. As in, for example, when the scamdemic hit, people might notice I didn't lose my head and start going completely against all principles and start advocating for lockdowns and, maybe they're right this time. Oh, maybe people should be taking the vaccine or anything like that. No, from the very beginning, I knew exactly what it was because I've been researching this for however long at that point, over a decade, talking about medical martial law, talking about the quarantines that are coming, talking about the swine flu scamdemic and the SARS scamdemic and all of these other pieces of the puzzle that added up to a worldview that made me realize what was happening as it was happening. This is a biosecurity state takeover, so that I was not able to get ramroded and railroaded into something that I didn't believe or start advocating things that were against my principles, as certain other people did. And maybe they had to, you know, tuck their tail in and admit they'd been had, and that's good. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with being had. It does happen. But if you are taken more often than not, then there is something wrong with the map that you are using to try to map out reality. And the less able you are to accurately understand what is happening in the world around you, the better sign that is that you are operating on some sort of false worldview and that something has to change.
Yeah, I don't think that the people, you know, who I'm concerned about or talking about agree that or even have any thought of having been taken.
I understand that, but
this is all normal, and this happened, and that was as advertised. And you know, and then they'll listen to you talk using a word like scamdemic, and they'll think, oh, that's crackpot language. You know, that's like, and they don't have a sense of you know, you've been at this for what, almost 20 years now. You're known for meticulous research, and you're known for completely transparent reporting. But there's all that they're hearing is what you're saying, and there's no appreciation of how you got there. And then they just hear, oh, James Corbett is just sounding like, the far right loonies, sounding like the Trump camp and talking about the deep state. And this is, you know, that's hogwash. It's more hogwash from you, James. And this is I think that's the problem, that people, they just skim the top, and they're not, what they get at that cruddy top skim is, you know, something that they can just dismiss. They'll throw out the whole pot of soup, and they don't realize delicious and nutritious it could be.
No, I absolutely understand what you're saying, and I agree with what you were saying, because absolutely people will do that. But I think they will be doing that anyway, because there are certain topics that I think people understand are, as a good whatever, Democrat, Republican, whatever it is, I can't go there. Therefore, they will be looking for those words or those things that make them uncomfortable. Now, from my perspective, then, I guess it comes, everyone is their own free individual who can do what they want. So personally, what do I want to do? Do I want to be the type of person who's going to start calculating and refining and trying to, you know, police my own language so that I don't scare or offend anyone who isn't familiar with what it is I'm talking about? But then there are different things that I would say to different groups. What if I was trying to reach out to Republicans, for example, specifically? Then I'd have to tailor my language a certain way. But no, what if I'm trying to reach out to the coastal lefty liberals? Well, then I have to tailor my language in a separate, different way. My my perspective is I'm going to be me, 100% unabashedly, unreservedly me, and communicate things in the way that I want to communicate them. Sometimes that's through satire and humor and sarcasm that I know puts certain people off. Sometimes that's by using certain phrases that undermine the narrative, scamdemic, or refusing to call vaccine, etc.
Maga jabs, right?
Maga jab, yeah, absolutely. Hopefully some that reaches the people that it needs to reach. But I'm not calculating my language to try to, you know, tailor it to reach a certain audience or to placate certain sensibilities. I'm just going to be me. And I know that will turn certain people off. But so what? No matter how I speak, it's going to turn certain people off. But if I am 100% authentically, totally me, then that's the best I can possibly do in terms of communicating this information. And I will reach the people that I can reach, which is why I'm always, always stressing. I think more people should be out there putting this information out in whatever way occurs to them, authentically, 100% them, because they will be able to reach people that wouldn't listen to me. Because they come from a different perspective. They have a different vocabulary. They have a different way of expressing themselves. It's not about me trying to, you know, twist myself into some pretzel knot to placate a certain type of listener. It's just some people will like what I say, some people won't. And I don't care, to be frank. I don't care if some people are put off by my language or the way that I put this information. That's on them. That really has nothing to do with me. And again, I think to the extent that we can stress that it is about the information more than the person presenting the information, I know that's an uphill battle. There will always be people who just dislike certain ways that information is presented. There's nothing we can do about that fundamentally as human beings. But since there is nothing we can do about it, we might as well just authentically be ourselves and try to have that conversation. And yep, I know that's going to turn certain people off, but I don't care.
Well, I would say that what you do is of great benefit to the people who are ready to look into things and who, I mean, it's, you provide a sort of library of kind of the history of where things have started and where how they have interacted and where they've led. And you do not, I would say, indulge in wild theorizing. You don't indulge in you don't go out on a limb for things. I mean, it's a lot of it is kind of like a history lecture, I would say. You know, it's dense and everything is documented. You know, and your channel, the Corbett Report, your tagline is open source intelligence news. What could you just break that down for anybody who doesn't know precisely what that means?
So when I was first putting the Corbett Report together, when I was starting to think about the website, one of the first things that I knew that I would do, which even at the time sort of differentiated what I was about to do to what I was seeing online, was that I knew, for example, I was listening to podcasts and radio shows and things online at that point. And I was always frustrated where people were talking about some document or talking about some video or whatever it was. But then you'd go to the show notes or the page for the show online and they wouldn't link up what they were talking about. And that was frustrating to me because, hey, it's the internet age. You can link to that document. You know, it would be quite easy to do. And so that was that. I knew that was going to be an important part of what I did. When I talked about some document, I was going to link to it so that people could go read it for themselves, which, of course, is the open source ethos that people probably know most are most familiar with in the software community. Open source meaning that you can look at and inspect the code. Well, you can look at and inspect the code of everything that I'm putting together. So if I'm talking about a document, I'll link to the document. If I'm talking about a video, I'll link to the video so that you can go and look at it yourself, see how I constructed the narrative that I'm constructing and see if you think, did he accurately represent that? Is it in context? Does it mean what he thinks it means, et cetera, et cetera? That's totally up to you to inspect that and to see that for yourself. And as I was thinking about this and really kind of formulating the ethos by which I was going to operate, there was a Washington Post, might have been Washington Times article, about the CIA operating on the principle of open source intelligence and having an open source intelligence unit, which made the point that the vast majority of the information that the intelligence agencies like the CIA rely on and use and are actionable is not the stuff that they get from the super secret James Bond sleuths going behind enemy lines and taking, you know, photographs with microfilm or whatever. It's just openly available information. And so they have an entire unit that's dedicated to simply looking at what's online, listening to foreign radio stations, reading foreign newspapers, looking at magazines.
Doing what you do.
Exactly right. And so I thought, wow, that's perfect, because exactly what I am trying to do is exactly what the they, them, those are doing. It's just that they have so much more resources. And obviously, they have entire sections of people who are doing this for a living, essentially. Well, my idea is, hey, we can all do this together collectively. We can crowdsource this, and I can be one of those nodes in that open source network of open source intelligence. And it's the people's version of that. So that's kind of my vision of what this could be. And I've tried to enact that in various ways. For example, in the past, I've had open source investigations on my site where there's a breaking news subject or something. For example, was it MH370 or 317? I can't remember at this point. The one that got shot down. There was an open source investigation, and people were collecting stuff from all around the world. And the great thing is, in my audience, there are people who can speak Russian or, you know, read Ukrainian or whatever it is, and they can put together information from sources that I wouldn't have access to normally. So I think it's a powerful idea. I haven't found the right way to actually activate that in my audience, but at any rate, I think it's a powerful idea.
I think that one of the problems that I see happening in the world of alternative media is that there are a lot of journalists out there who do not have that same meticulous approach that you have, you know, the same ethos and approach. And they do tend to, you know, maybe they do half the work of the research, but then the other half is the speculation. And maybe they're a little loosey-goosey with interpreting something. And then it just becomes, that becomes something that people look at and say, oh, well, that person is completely untrustworthy. And so, you know, they've said something about whatever, vaccines, say, or about COVID lockdowns, or, you know, and something that just has turned out to be patently untrue or a weak point. And that is used as evidence why, nope, nothing to see here, nothing to worry about here. You know, I think that there's a lot of disservice done to the cause of trying to make sense of things that are, you know, if not totally hidden, kind of not meant to be looked at. And so then the whole idea of questioning it becomes something that can be pitched out because, oh yeah, that person came up with this wild theory, and so that's nuts. So I think that there is a little bit of an extent that the field of alternative journalism is kind of, I don't know, has some minefields in it that undermine getting people to listen to the people like yourself who are actually doing real work. And that's unfortunate.
Yes, I understand exactly what you're saying. Again, I think that goes back to the fundamental point that I'm trying to make, that it isn't about the person who is spouting information, it is about the information. But actually, that is one of the ways that I evaluate things that I'm listening to. I have found it a very useful thing for me if I'm listening to some new podcast or some new person that I haven't listened to in independent media. I'll give them a chance and I'll start listening. And after a certain amount of time, whatever it is, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, if I haven't actually learnt anything new and anything that I can actually identifiably verify for myself as a new piece of information, I'll stop listening. What do I care? It's just opinion. And unfortunately, it is so much easier for people to simply spout opinion than it is to actually dig up and uncover and report on facts, identifiable information, that, yes, it is certainly over the past decade or so, as people have realized that the independent media revolution has begun, and now you see all these people coming in, and yeah, a lot of them don't have anything to bring to the table other than a vibrant personality. They have a nice radio voice or whatever it is. They look good on camera, whatever it is. And that's what they bring. And then they have whatever informed or ill-informed opinions on top of that. Yay, who cares? So I think there is an incumbent responsibility on the listener. I really do think it's up to the listener to sort through this. It's not up to whoever is putting information out there to put it in the way that will be most beneficial to them. No, you have to do the work of finding out what is valuable and what isn't, determining that for yourself. No one can or should be telling you that. It's something that you're going to have to come to for your own. And to be fair, there's media out there that is valuable that I could get information from, but I just don't respond to. I've had people recommend certain things to me before, and I've given it a listen, and it just sounds like stupid morning zoo radio show to me that I wouldn't listen to in a million years. But I know that there are other people who like that, and that's the way they get their information. Hey, great. Whatever floats your boat, as long as you are getting the information. But again, it just comes down to what I think people are in it are. It comes down to the audience. What is the audience in it for? And if you're in it just to, you know, have fun with some personality that you like listening to, well, fine. If that's your goal, go for it. Well, but if you're in it for information, it should be about the information, not the personality.
I think a lot of times people are just looking to have their beliefs reinforced.
That's true. That's true. And we're all guilty of that to some extent. We all exist in some level of bubble that we've created for ourselves.
Yeah, that's true. But there is, I like to challenge myself by listening to people who I don't agree with. And, you know, and also people who maybe I agree with some of what they say.
That's the thing. There's very few people I 100% agree with or 100% disagree with. But to me, it's always the feedback that I'm always most surprised about is when people are 99.9% on the same page, but it's the 0.1% that they want to talk about. Of course, it's the tiny little, no, you have to believe exactly this in exactly this way or else I castigate you from my bubble. That to me is the problem.
Yeah. And I tend to hold things like that as, I don't agree with that, but I'll respect that that is that person's point of view and, you know, kind of hold it in my head, even if I'm not putting my brand on it or, you know, attaching to it. But I think that a lot of people, they just are not willing to do that. You know, if somebody, even if half what they're saying is true, if the other half offends them, they want to cancel the person.
And to be fair, I think, I don't know, I guess I can't speak for everyone, but I think we all have certain principles that we wouldn't compromise, right? I mean, at the very least, if somebody's talking about, you know, child torture being a wonderful thing or something, I think I would disagree with you in that, no matter what else I agree with you on, right? So. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to separate people from their opinions sometimes.
I don't think the problem is disagree. I think that it's good to be able to disagree with people on certain things, you know, and just say, I'm not into child torture, you know, and not that I think it's okay the other person is, but just knowing that and
my point is there are certain things that I think are so fundamental to our principles of our core fundamental principles and ethics that we wouldn't be able to, like, I don't care if I agree with 99.9% if you're for whatever despicable thing, I'm going to be completely disassociate myself from you. So there are things that I would draw as a line in the sand.
So that's interesting because, you know, that tells me that it's a matter perhaps of degree. You know, you're saying that if it were something extreme about the person that was like, oh, you're believing in that? Okay, I'm not listening to anything you say. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, it seems like that line, like there's no gray area. That line is so firm. If anything, you know, crosses the offense line or the disagreement line, not even an offense, just a disagreement. Yeah. It's like, oh no, that undermines the faith in anything else that they have to say.
No, it is. I mean, it is messy. And I don't want to sound like I'm floating on a cloud and, oh, I can perfectly understand. I can totally separate message from messenger and all of that. I think as human beings, I think we are all situated in this in messy ways that are not always logical and defensible in some sort of, you know, rational, purely rational plane. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to give that impression. Yeah. But it does frustrate me to see the extent to which people and here's something that has occurred to me recently is that my work, as you say, I think it is it can be sort of like like a history lesson or a lecture or some sort of more of an educational thing, which is great for people who are in that context and are looking for information and want to learn. But I'm also at the point where now I guess I'm a media personality to some extent, and I have people in my audience who have been listening to me for years, in some cases over a decade, in some cases close to two decades. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, when you are surrounded by these people in your media community and you're listening to the same podcasts and getting the same opinions all the time, of course, who are you going to spend your time lashing out at? Who are you going to spend your time disagreeing with and arguing with is the people around you. And mm-hmm. I think people can lose sight of the sort of the bigger picture. I don't even care if you're exactly opposed to all of the things that I believe and all of my ideals, you're still not my enemy. My enemy are the people in positions of power and wealth and with the resources to implement these global agendas. That's the bigger picture of the people we should be spending our time. If we want to spend our time being angry and arguing with people, it should probably be directed that way rather than at each other. But we're surrounded by each other. I don't know any of these globalist bigwigs who go to World Economic Forum. I don't interact with those people. So what can I do? I might as well spend my time arguing with these people in this community that I'm involved in. And, what's the way out of that trap is something that I've been thinking about lately.
The way out of those small arguments, you mean?
Yeah. How to keep people focused on the bigger picture instead of just fighting with each other because you're in proximity to each other.
Well, you also have the issue with the alternative media space of people being hyper aware of misinformation, which is a term that comes from, legacy media. But in alternative media, misinformation is everybody's very aware. Like, is this, is this a message? Is this a limited hangout? Is this opposition? Is this you've got people that think about it. And there's a very low level of trust, I would say, in general. Mm-hmm. But I think it does tend to keep people on their toes a bit, even if sometimes it causes people to reject things readily.
Yeah, yeah. I think, as frustrating as it can be, certainly as someone who's producing this media, and, of course, everyone's always, oh, I don't know if I trust you, James. You might be some super secret agent. Okay, fair enough. You don't know that. So, but in a sense, maybe this goes back to what I was saying. Yeah, low level of trust. But why do we have trust in media figures anyway? What is the point of that? Maybe we should come from a fundamental skeptical position where it's more like, okay, you convince me, you show me, you lay out on the table what you have, and I'll take a look at it, and I'll take on board those things that I think are valuable. And yes, again, as a filter, we can't devote all of our attention to everyone, all 8 billion voices in the world. We have to filter it down to people that we tend to believe are at least working, operating on some sort of principle that, okay, this person is doing their homework. I've seen they've put it forward. Ultimately, I think it's a signal to noise ratio that we're looking for, and everyone sets their own ratio. But for me, I like a lot of signal and a little bit of noise. And mm-hmm. some people might be able to put up with more noise if they find that the signal is valuable enough or what have you. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, again, it comes down to, maybe we shouldn't be trusting media figures. Maybe that's not what this is about. And to the extent that people, I get it. I definitely see people who overthink and analyze and scrutinize everything 15 different ways so that they can never ultimately end up believing anything that is ever presented to them. But is that, at any rate, is that any less healthy than being simply a trusting believer in, I just go with whatever the WHO says? I mean, in a way, it's maybe the exact mirror image of that. And I don't know if either one of them is particularly a worse position to be in.
My journalist, legacy media friend, he says, so He says, as Oliver Berkman says, we have on average 4,000 weeks on the planet. I've used up most of mine. And then there's the problem of having this full-time job, which requires me to read magazine material all day. So no, I ain't going to read 20,000 words from James Corbett on the real story of Osama bin Laden. No, no, no. Get three no's there, James. and he goes on to say, it's easy for me to believe that Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld were corrupt and even evil, though. I believe, quote, what is normal is for our fallen foreign policy establishment to play a malign influence around the world. But no, no, no to James Corbett. And, but, you know, putting that much of his time to you, who do not fall within his category of a trusted source, you know, and I feel that it would be tremendously valuable for him to read your or listen to your three-part Media Matrix series, for instance. When you are laying it out in a way that is very well researched and connected, I feel like it should be of value to a person who works in that business. And I would think it would be that kind of perspective would be something that one would want to have. Or maybe not.
No, I obviously I agree with you. And I think there is hopefully a value to the information that I'm putting out there. And I stress to the information rather than to myself. But again, I don't feel like personally responsible that I need to somehow craft my message in such a way that your friend particularly would want to listen to me. Because again, he's already prejudged that and made up his mind. I'm not a trusted source. Hey, I'm not on Wikipedia. If you Google me, you're probably going to find one of these sites that rate, you know, websites by their reliability, and Corbett Report will not be rated highly by any of those sites. So I get it. And he's got a limited amount of time in the day, and he does this for a living, and you know, I'm set in my ways. So I don't feel like I have to somehow appease someone like that. They're either going to be interested and open-minded to listen to this, or they're not. And if that's the case, then so be it. If, I mean, this is of course clearly an opportunity for somebody out there, probably maybe even somebody who's listening to this conversation, who has the particular skills that would be required in order to placate someone like that person in particular into finding a way to put this information in a, whatever that is, a bite-sized enough form or a friendly enough form or in a sort of a legacy media tailored way that would be appealing to someone like that. And if that's what someone out there is inclined to do with this information, awesome. But again, all I can do is just put it out in the way that I do, and the people who are ready for it and want it, here it is. Here's your buffet. I've laid it all out on the table.
Yeah, there it is. It's waiting when you come around to it. So, you know, that at least is reassuring, I suppose.
That's a bit of a sigh to end things on, though.
Sorry.
Well, it's unfortunately where we're at. Yeah, I get it.
Well, but it is, I mean, and that's not to, I mean, it's no way to belittle tremendous, what I see as a tremendous value of your work and you as a resource. And I, the sigh is just this feeling of, I wish that more people could just take the chance to listen to what you have to say, because, you know, you approach it like, I mean, a dorky academic. And that is what people like that listen to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Well. But somehow it's like, no, he's harmless. He's just a researcher. But that it goes into the scary, scary land when it's the territory that is unfamiliar.
Well, there are many, 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 many ways that we signal our tribal affiliations both on the surface and in ways that we're not even conscious of. And we are very, very, very adept as human beings at picking up on who is signaling the right thing to be part of our in-group and who is not. And clearly there are certain informational triggers that no matter how you dress, how you look, how you sound, what you say, it's going to be the certain topics or things that you know you're not allowed to bring up, or at least not bring up in a certain way, in a certain context. You can talk about corporate corruption in a sort of a broad sense, but when you talk about big pharma specifically and you're talking about the biosecurity, no, that's crazy. So again, I get it. It's the way human beings are wired, and maybe it's fighting the uphill battle to expect that that will ever change. But to the extent that I can, I at least want to draw people's attention to the fact that they are making a choice to dismiss information based on the messenger rather than on the message itself, which is not a good way to proceed. And secondly, I guess what I'm saying is I'm just going to continue operating in the way that I do and know that the people who are ready for it will find it one way or another. And I have to rely on the help of people like yourself out there that have spread the word that is the reason why anyone knows about me at all. Certainly now that I've been scrubbed off of YouTube, because the average person is never, ever going to find me or randomly stumble on me ever again. So really, it has to be that. And then thirdly, I do have faith that there are other people out there that will take this information and will do something with it. It doesn't have to be, you know, starting a podcast or whatever, but we'll be able to do something in the real world with this information that will make a difference. And that's ultimately what this is about for me. I really don't care if there are people out there who dismiss this information because they're not ready for it, or they don't like the way that I talk about it or what have you. That's great. That's up to them. And I like to try to keep the humility of knowing, you know, I agree with you that the information I'm presenting is genuinely valuable. And I say that with 0% ego, because I know it has transformed my life and the way that I see it and the way I understand the world in such a profound way that I know this information is valuable. But I like to try to keep the humility of knowing, well, there are other things out there that I don't know about that would be similarly profound and transformational, that somebody out there is saying, I just wish James would, you know, listen to this or watch this documentary or, you know, talk to this person or whatever it is. And I know those things exist out there, and I have to maintain the humility to know, yeah, I certainly don't know everything. And we're all like that. All of us as human beings are missing out on something that we should probably know about. And we have to exist in that state and find a way to exist and keep our minds open enough that we're open to new experiences, but not so open that everything falls out, as they tend to say.
Well, for anybody who is curious about hearing what you have to say, and you have podcasts, you have essays, and you have videos. So for any preferred method of, taking in information, you have the basis covered. How do you prefer people find your work?
I prefer they go to CorbettReport.com. That's CORBETT report.com, because that is the one place. Well, that'll be my last line of defense. We'll put it that way, because I may be scrubbed off of any given platform at any time, like my YouTube channel was suddenly and summarily deleted a few years ago for political wrongthink. But at any rate, I will be at CorbettReport.com as long as they haven't started seizing the domain names of alternative media researchers. So that's the best place to go. And I always like to promote RSS, which I know, again, is a bit of an uphill battle. But I know everyone these days thinks that you follow someone on Twitter or you follow them on X or whatever it is, or Instagram or whatever, TikTok. But no, that's a controlled, centralized way of getting your followers really invested in a different media ecosystem that is controlled by some other big tech intermediary that then gets to control what people see and when and can scrub you off at any time. That's the stupid way to do it. The smart way to do it, people who have intelligence and brain cells to rub together will be able to figure out how to use an RSS reader to subscribe directly. No third-party middleman, nothing in between. You can subscribe peer-to-peer directly to whoever you want, and you can get everything that they publish as they publish it. It's a wonderful system that has been deliberately undermined by the big tech giants for reasons that should be pretty obvious. Anyway, so I have an RSS feed at my website. I suggest people learn how to use it.
All right, that's something that I have not learned yet. There will be a little challenge for me to take on myself.
Do it.
All right. Well, James, Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. And I hope that, I hope this does broaden your, you know, your listenership in some small way or large way. Maybe it'll catch on, who knows? And bring more of what you have to say to ears that I think could gain from your work.
Well, I appreciate your efforts in spreading the word about this and for putting information out there in the way that you can. I think more people should be involved in this now that we are in this amazing internet media revolution. Let's take advantage of it.
Hear, hear. All right. Thanks a lot, James.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.